This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Welcome to Stupidity, home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
The Stu Gossard, a man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stu Goss, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
Welcome into another episode of Stupidity, the biggest podcast in the world, thanks to you. Please subscribe, rate and review, unsubscribe, resubscribe, re-rate, re-review. By doing that, you have made us the biggest podcast in the world. I am scrambling right now, Billy Gill, because I'm looking for the DraftKings liner. Vacation. We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use code STU for a special offer when you sign up. That's code STU, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Good afternoon, Billy Gill.
Hi, Stu Gotts. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Stu Gotts, can I ask you a question? I don't mean to, hurt your feelings here, but why can't you take a vacation? Why can't you just relax, turn things off, unwind? Like, you should be relaxing, enjoying your family time before your daughters go off to college. And you're like, you know what? Big KD news. We got to talk to Shams about this.
Because I love Shams. I wanted to play Sham or Scam. It's like being on vacation.
I think 10 times already.
And I know.
This is the part of Stupidity where we say, well, you know, his name's actually Shams, Stu Gotts. And then you'll ask him, is it Shams or is it Shams?
I think it's Shams. Like,
well, it's
Scams
not.
With
He's
an
told
H.
us multiple
oh,
times.
Shams?
Yes.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Can't play the game. How about Shams or no Jarowski? No? Bad game. Anyway, Billy, I don't know why I can't just take vacation. I have no idea. It's a really good question. I should just take vacation, but this is big news, the KD news, and I want to talk to our guy Shams and see what happened with the Heat and why the Heat didn't get him, you know?
Where'd you think he was going to go? Did you really think he was going to go to the Heat?
I did. I actually thought the Heat
really?
Had a chance of getting him. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't go anywhere. I mean, I really am. How's the week been, by the way?
You know, it's been missing a little something. You know, it's been fun, but it's just
right.
You know, missing a little something.
A little something, something? Like what? Like Dan?
Dan, is one of the somethings. You're another something. It's just, you know, when everyone's not together, things are just a little bit off for whatever reason.
Yeah, but it seems like you guys have been having fun. Like, Amin's been doing he's been working hard. It's the hardest Amin has ever worked for four consecutive days in his life, that's for sure.
Amin seems to have a billion things going on at the same time. Like, he has this show that he's doing this week, but he has a show, I think, on Mad Dog Sports Radio. He has multiple podcasts, Cinephobe.
A little double dipping.
Yeah. I've called Cinephile a couple times this week, and I think it's really getting on his nerves. But he has Cinephobe, he has Basketball Illuminati. He seems to be quite the busy man, flying across the country, going home for a couple days, flying back across the country.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point you make about me being on vacation, because you were nice enough to do an episode of Stupidity already.
Yeah.
I mean, and let me tell you something. There is nothing better than having your name on a podcast and you contribute exactly nothing. I mean, it's fantastic. Thank you, Billy.
You're welcome. I mean, but here we are. We're doing one anyway. So I was like, Stugat, because here's the thing that I've.
We're banking, Billy. It's, you know, it's content. I mean.
Here's the thing that I've noticed, Stugat.
I can't wait to hear the thing.
I've noticed that even when you're gone, you never really do get times, because it's like, hey, hop on a Zoom and join us for 20 minutes, join us for an hour, whatever. And you're scrambling, looking for conference rooms, looking for coffee shops, looking for wherever it is that you can join to just do weekend observations or whatever it is you have to do for the day, right?
Yeah.
And you've gone out of town a number of times, but I feel like you've never actually been able to get away. So I said, you know what? Last week you were out. We recorded some stuff. I knew this week you were doing more family things than last week. So I said, if I don't hear from him early in the week, which I knew is when you're going to be busy, I'm just going to do this and then we'll have it done. And if something pops up like KD, maybe we'll do something. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll talk about it next week, you know? So it's just trying to get you a little relief, because I know that the relief for you doesn't always come, even when you're looking for it. So
you provided me with relief and I still put myself to work is what you're saying.
Yeah. So, you know,
you just wanted me to take a week off.
Well, this is why I think you're never going to die, because I feel like there's not that many people that die while talking, like mid sentence. And I feel like that if you just never stop doing, and I don't think it has anyone ever died in the middle of a podcast or doing a sports radio show.
No, I mean, there's a time I thought Hank Goldberg did, but he was alive. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. Too soon?
Yeah.
Too soon. Sorry, the hammer.
So I think that your thing is, if I just keep doing shows and just never stop talking, it'll never catch up to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Just keep talking.
Not a bad plan, right?
Well, it's funny, Billy, because I'm always pacing around the house. I'm always moving. I'm always on the move. I'm walking to nowhere, but I'm always on the move. Yeah. And it's the same philosophy there. It's like, hey, if I just keep moving and I keep talking, I'm never going to die. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. I mean, pretty good. I mean, and so listen, I'm alive. Like, I made it to 50, Bill, which is exactly five. If you told me when I was 20, would I make it to 50, I would have told you, coin toss. But here I am. Walking, still talking. Yeah.
You didn't think you were going to get to 50.
I was right in the middle of it, Bill. I mean, that was the middle of me touring with the Grateful Dead. I mean, there are times where I felt like I died. But I kept talking. I kept moving. I kept shaking. I kept dancing. I kept smoking. And here I am. How about that?
Your life is like a filibuster.
It is?
Yeah. Just trust me on this one. It's fine.
What's a filibuster?
Yeah, I'll explain it to you later. Want to talk to Shams?
I would like to talk to Shams. I'm very excited about this. He's a good friend. He's always there for us when we need him, even when I'm on vacation. Let's talk to Shams. Filibuster.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
How are you, dude? Your hair looks great, man. Why are you always worried about your hair? I mean, your hair looks fantastic.
Hey, man, listen, you never know. You never know if it gets messed up.
Yeah, but your hair can't. Like, Billy, look at that hair. Is this hair perfect? Every hair is in place right now.
I could never. I just got a haircut like 2 days ago. My hair still would not look that good.
I know. Listen, I'm jealous. What do you mean you never know? You're sitting inside. It's not like you're outside.
You never know, man. The wind, the air currents.
Wind, you know, the wind.
You're inside your house.
Fans in the house, you know. You never know.
How much time do you spend on your hair?
Honestly, it's like 2-3 minute process in the morning, and then I'm good rest of the day.
So yeah, like a whole. You have a whole routine. Does it start the
share
night
that
before?
Exact science with us?
Yeah,
right?
What do we do?
No, I mean, I just blow dry my hair. That's all that is.
Mm. Really? I mean, look at me. You're talking to two slobs. Look at the two of us.
Well, it doesn't stop at the hair on your head, because your beard is perfectly groomed. It's not. It's just the right length, like kind of stubbly, but not too much. Yeah. That there's hairs that are out of place.
I can't do the dark hair. I can't do the darker. I mean, I've tried to grow out my beard. Come back. If I grow this out like another week, it gets really, really dark.
Don't
so
do anything.
I don't know if I can do that.
What you're doing right now is perfect. Keep doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it at that.
It's working out well for you, Shams. I mean, the look, everything. I mean, Shams, I'm wondering, because the news, it broke this morning, a little bit last night with Chet Holmgren, and I'm wondering how mad the Thunder should be that he'll be missing the entire season here.
I mean, it's just brutal, Stugatz. I mean, to me, I mean, for that to happen, you know, during a pro-am game in the middle of the summer, I mean, you're only a month away from training camp. So for that to happen, just brutally difficult for the Thunder, for Chet Holmgren. He's going to be out for the entire season. And I do think, listen, could he, you know, rush his recovery process and try to make it back in 4 or 5 months? Like, I've heard that theory a little bit in the last 24 hours, but I think the Thunder as an organization, they've taken a very cautious approach. Chet Holmgren, with an injury like this, you want to make sure when you come back, you're 100% healthy. So definitely it's tough news in the short term, but a guy like that, 7'1" with the body type that he has, I mean, him and Zion have really special, I think, unique body frames. And so they have to put a little bit more time, a little bit more energy in terms of how they activate their body on a day-to-day basis. And I think this is an unfortunate injury, and hopefully he can get better and heal up soon and make a full recovery.
Is it going to lead? Do you think it's going to lead to teams not wanting their players to do this kind of stuff? It was 3-on-3. Teams not wanting players to do this stuff during the offseason?
I mean, I feel like that's like a every summer conversation. Like, Klay Thompson tears Achilles in 2020, right? You know, just playing 5-on-5. DeMarcus Cousins, I think in 2019, similar, tears his ACL playing 5-on-5 when he signed a deal with the Lakers. I mean, this is just a part of basketball. I think Sam Presti said it today in his press conference, like, injuries happen. Anytime you step foot on the floor, injuries take place. It's just unfortunate. A guy like Chet, you know the body type that he has. He's going to deal with a lot of rigors once the NBA season starts. So, I mean, he was playing like daily. I mean, when you talk about 5-on-5 in those private runs that he was playing in LA, and then you play in pro-am games, this is just unfortunate. This is just the byproduct of when you play a lot of basketball, you make yourself more susceptible to injury.
It's interesting, man. I'd be so upset right now obviously for him and if I'm that organization. Shams, I wanted to get into KD with you here because it's such a fascinating and interesting story, and you've been all over it, of course, and it's been great to, you know, kind of sit back and watch you work, my man. You've been killing it. I'm wondering if you can explain to me and the audience, how did we arrive at a place where KD was so frustrated with an organization that, A, he chose, and also a coach that he chose, but also teammates that he chose? How did we arrive in that place?
I think, you know, it's a complex situation, right? Because if you look at it the last 2-3 years, yeah, Kevin Durant has a lot of, you know, from the outside perspective, there's a lot of power that comes with being Kevin Durant on the Brooklyn Nets. But you look at what's kind of taken place since let's take a look at what's happened since the season ended. They get swept against the Boston Celtics. And then after that, really within a week or days, Adam Harrington, an assistant coach on the Nets, a guy that's been known as a Kevin Durant confidant. He was with him in Oklahoma City. They have a long, long history. Adam Harrington gets fired from his position with the Nets. And then a few weeks after that, Sean Marks, the GM, gives a press conference, basically, you know, saying that Kyrie Irving, they need to make sure they're going to commit to him. They want him to be available. And basically that they need to re-energize and re-ingrain the values of the Nets culture that they had over the last 4 or 5 years. And I mean, what's changed in the Nets culture the last 3 years? It's the arrival of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So I don't have full clarity on whether Kevin Durant took slight to that, but that is an event that occurred. And then directly after that, I think you have to look at the negotiations with Kyrie Irving and the lack of a long-term deal. It really took a long time this offseason for the Nets and Kyrie Irving to seriously engage on a long-term contract. And then he had a couple different scenarios, a 2-year deal, a 4-year deal. Obviously, they were not able to reach agreement on a deal. And either way, it wasn't like he was getting a fully guaranteed offer. I think both offers, whether it was a 2-year deal or a 4-year deal, had whether incentives, non-guarantees based on triggers in those deals. So you add those three things up. Those are things that happen. Those are facts. And I think you have to look at those as playing a part in Kevin Durant's disgruntled status. And then when he asks out of a trade on June 30th, you know that it goes beyond basketball, because the one guy that Kevin Durant stayed in communication with throughout his, you know, uneasiness over the summer was Kyrie Irving. So whatever Kyrie Irving decided, he ended up opting in. It's clear that Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, they were making moves in terms of, you know, at the end of the day, they're both self-interest, right? Because Kyrie Irving was entering free agency. He had to do what was best for him. And Kevin Durant, you know, after his close friend and confidant, Adam Harrington, gets fired, and what transpires over the offseason, the difficult ending, he makes a decision that he feels is best for him in terms of asking out. And no deal gets done. And I think that you could look at as a byproduct of the realization that there really was nothing that was on the table that the Nets were going to move on. And so Kevin Durant and the Nets realizing, like, our future in another month is probably going to be the same thing. And so why make it uglier than it needs to be? Let's resolve this situation sooner than later.
Why were the deals not there? Why do you think?
Well, I mean, when you look at the teams that had significant interest, right? Like, let's go down the list. Boston, Miami, Toronto, Phoenix, Memphis in the last couple weeks. Who else am I missing? I mean, those are really the principal teams, right? And when you look at Boston, they just went to the finals. I think that they had a threshold that they were willing to meet. You look at Jaylen Brown, Derek White in a first-round pick. But if you're going to give up a Marcus Smart along with that, or Robert Williams along with that, I think they felt like that was too steep of a price. Even though it is Kevin Durant, this is a team that just went to the finals. So that was really the best offer from everything I've been told that Brooklyn had on the table. And then when you look beyond that, Miami, Bam Adebayo would have been the centerpiece. But the Nets can't take Bam Adebayo because of the Ben Simmons situation and the fact that he's on the roster. They can't take another player on the designated max extension. So you have that situation. Then Toronto, the only deal that would have made sense from the Nets perspective is Scottie Barnes. And Toronto was not willing to put in Scottie Barnes. And then you look on and on. Phoenix, Brooklyn never really had, I'm told, interest in a DeAndre Ayton deal. He ends up getting off the board anyway. And really the only thing you're left with is Mikal Bridges and 4 or 5 draft picks. And that didn't really appeal to the Nets. And then when you look beyond that, the Memphis Grizzlies, they were unwilling to give up Jaren Jackson or Desmond Bane in a deal. So when you look down the list and you look at all these teams that are willing to make offers, but just not willing to satisfy that high asking price that the Nets had, I mean, there really wasn't a choice. I think the realization that the offers just were not going to be at that high level. And, you know, the flip side could also be that the Nets set those high price tags maybe because they really didn't want to trade Kevin Durant. And they were making these, you know, I have heard around the league team executives say, like, the Nets asking price may have been overly high because they really didn't want to move him. But I do believe, you know, a team like Boston, these teams did have windows of, you know, Toronto. There was a window. If Toronto was willing to give up Scottie Barnes, I think there was a deal to be had. These teams just were not willing. And I think at the end of the day, both sides realized that. And I think the realization was that your best opportunity to win a championship is going to be in Brooklyn. And Kevin Durant, the Nets met on Monday in LA. And I think this was a meeting that was long overdue. This should have happened weeks and months ago. But the fact that they were able to get in the same room, air out their grievances, I think in the long run will help them.
Shams, did the Knicks try to get in there? Did they try to make an offer? They figured, hey, the Nets aren't dealing them to us.
No, I think there were calls made. The Knicks did make calls on Kevin Durant, from what I'm told. But I think I think both sides were cognizant. They didn't really have enough. Because listen,
they had Nets, the picks though, Shams. They have the picks.
But if the Nets wanted picks, they could have moved Kevin Durant to Memphis for 5 firsts. They could have gotten a handful of first rounders from Phoenix. I think if it was a pick laden deal, I think they could have done multiple deals. I think even Minnesota, before they did the Rudy Gobert deal, reached out to Brooklyn and made a similar offer for Kevin Durant. But it was obvious if the Nets, if Joe Tsai, Sean Marks, if they're going to move Kevin Durant, they wanted a top tier all-star type player, which I guess you could say Jaylen Brown, Bam Adebayo, Donovan Mitchell, those guys are that type of player. But then along with that, they wanted high level rotation players. They wanted all your draft picks. And so when you're thinking about a price that steep, a deal was just incredibly difficult. And maybe in past years, there would have been a market for this deal. In this summer, there wasn't.
Were the Heat even close?
The last time Stugatz, the Heat called the Nets was right around summer league, or even before that, which is, I mean, over a month. So no, I mean, they never really aggressively pursued a deal, because I think at the end of the day, they knew they would have had to gut multiple players, right? And I think, so that's another part of this, is if you're Miami or if you're Boston, you know, you've already proven these are two teams that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. So if you're Miami, let's say, for instance, you can go get Kevin Durant for a Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, Max Strus, and maybe another piece. Is that you get Kevin Durant And I think Kevin Durant is one of the best players in the world. Jimmy Butler, one of the best players in the world. Kyle Lowry, I think, will have a bounce back year. But does Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant bring you closer to a championship than Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, and Max Strus? What do you think, Stu Gatz?
Give me that first scenario again, because I know the current roster.
Yeah, the first scenario would, I mean, at the end of the day, something around Kyle Lowry, Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, or the current.
That, I'm closer with the first one, with Kevin Durant, because...
Really?
Because
of, interesting.
I mean, Kevin Durant's... Listen, it's why I got so mad that he left Oklahoma City. Like, he's a generational player. He didn't need to go to Golden State. He didn't need those guys' help, okay? Kevin Durant would have won titles with Westbrook and James Harden, or just Westbrook. They were up 3-1 against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals, so I think... Yeah, like the fact that Memphis didn't give up Desmond Bain to get Kevin Durant, to me, is ludicrous, because Kevin Durant and Ja Morant probably won a championship.
Just imagine that. Imagine getting Kevin Durant and Ja Morant. Now, listen, I don't know at the end of the day, does Brooklyn do like Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bain, and like 4 or 5 first? I don't know the answer to that. But if you want to go get a guy like Kevin Durant in Memphis and pair him with Ja Morant, you have to put your best foot forward, I think. But, you know, clearly what Memphis is building, you know, I got to give credit. What Memphis is building, what Zach Kleiman has built there, I mean, they're well-positioned now. They're well-positioned in the future. They're going to have a lot of salary space in years to come, a lot of draft picks. Like, there's a lot of long-term flexibility. And the moment you get Kevin Durant, Stu Gatz, you know how it goes. Like, you bring Kevin Durant to any team, it's championship or bust every year. So, you know, if you feel like you're building something organically, do you really want that, like, you know, pressure right out the gates. And listen, I agree. You know, I can see your perspective, right? You bring Kevin Durant on a team with Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry, that might bring you closer to a championship. But I think clearly the Heat decision makers didn't have that same level of conviction as I think we might have. You know, when you look at a team with, you know, I do think that you can look at both sides of it too. I mean, a team with Kyle Lowry, Tyler Hero, Jimmy, Bam, you know, I think even Kevin Durant would have wanted to play with Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, not without Bam on the team. So, I think that's just based off common knowledge and logic. So, it was a tough scenario, but at the end of the day, none of these teams stepped up to the capacity that the Nets needed to move a guy like Kevin Durant.
Billy, which team would you rather have? The one with Durant? It's Durant, Lowry, and Jimmy Butler, or the current Heat roster? I mean, give me Durant.
The one with Durant, yeah. we'll figure it out.
No, and it's Shams, it seems like you're with us. Like, listen, I know you're a reporter, and I get it.
I'm kind of split. Listen, I think Kevin Durant's one of the best players in the world. I'm going to go back back to the people I talked to around the league. And I think there was a lot of split opinion on Miami and how they would look post KD trade. Like if they put all these chips to the table, right? Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Max Strus, because that's really what it would have required from a Brooklyn perspective. They would have wanted every last asset that you have, maybe even first round picks with that. Right. And so if you're Miami, I do think, you know, when I talk to league executives, this is going back at summer league in early July, I think league executives were definitely split on whether that's a good or bad move for Miami. And if league execs and people around the league are split, I think, and if it's not a no-brainer and you already made it to the conference finals with the team as is, you're already trying to build from within, I don't know. It's a tough one. It's honestly a coin flip.
It's got to bruise his ego a bit, the fact that teams weren't willing to give up. Like, I think the three of us are sitting here saying your team's better if you have Kevin Durant. And the fact that teams weren't willing to give up guys like Tyler Hero, draft picks, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson to get a generational player, a top 10, 15 player of all time, to me seems patently absurd. It just does.
Yeah, he's
still there, man.
Listen, I don't know if he's rethinking things or what. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the best way
to look at it. You should rethink Kyrie is what he should rethink. But anyway, go ahead. That's me saying it, not you, Shubs.
I think the asking price was so high. I think maybe a thought is, did they even want to trade me to begin with? And so I think that the realization that there was never going to be a deal at the end of the day, it was going to be impossible for a team to really meet that asking price. I think that realization seeping in over the last, 72 to, plus hours, I think probably is what led to the meeting on Monday, is what led to Kevin Durant, both sides airing out, how they feel. in that meeting in LA. And I think that ended up being the way that now both sides, I'm told, can, you know, exit that meeting, really refocus on next season. I think that's the thing that matters most. But there's no doubt there's going to be pressure on this Nets team. Every last move from media day onward is going to be scrutinized and looked at. There's going to be pressure on everyone with the Nets, from the roster, Steve Nash as coach, Sean Marks as general manager, like ownership. Everyone's got to be better, I think. And I think that's what you have to talk about in meetings like this.
Shams, do you think Kyrie eventually finds his way over to the Lakers? Because like people are still saying that for whatever reason.
I mean, I think there was a realistic window, a realistic chance for the Lakers possibly to have gotten Kyrie Irving, but it would have probably had to have taken place before his opt-in. Because once the opt-in occurred, you know, from everything I've been told, it was just a complete focus on, you know, 22-23 with the Nets. And I think now I can never predict the future. I think this is all fluid. I think things can change at any moment in terms of like over the next 6 to 8 months. But as of right now, the Lakers don't have max salary space. I after the Pat Beverly trade, they're going to have, I think, roughly 34 to 35 million in cap space next year. Kyrie Irving's max contract, I believe, is going to start in the 46-47 range. So they're still going to be 11 million short of that in salary space next year to go get a Kyrie Irving on a max deal next summer. So does Kyrie Irving take less? I don't know. And I don't know how the next 6 to 8 months play out with the Nets either. Like if they're gangbusters right out the gates and they're playing at a high level, they win the championship, like that'll change everything. Winning cures all. So I think this season is going to dictate a lot. I can't predict the future. I do think there was a point in time this summer where the Lakers were looked at as a realistic option. But I think once the opt-in took place, the focus became, and I think Kyrie Irving locked in on next season with the Nets and, having more dialogue with the team, with the organization, working out with his teammates this summer, which he's done. So I can't predict the future, but I think for now, Kyrie Irving is definitely going to be a Net.
Have you heard at all whether or not KD's a little frustrated with Kyrie Irving just because he's not there all the time? Like, is there any of that going on within that organization?
I mean, I haven't heard that. I mean, you know, when you look at it from a logical perspective, I think not having Kyrie Irving available full time, I think throughout the organization, it was difficult to deal with. I think Sean Marks even said that publicly in mid May in his press conference. It was tough for them to play without Kyrie Irving. This is one of the best players in the world. So I think not only for Kevin Durant, but I think anyone, James Harden last year, I think he talked about it publicly, the organization. But I know their relationship is beyond, you know, basketball too, right? So, you know, factoring that in, I think they have a relationship that transcends just basketball.
Apologies for my dog, Finney. He gets very excited when we talk about Kevin Durant. Billy, I'm going to spend my entire season sitting back and rooting against the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that I like, by the way, because what I now want...
Why?
Jackasses for not giving up Desmond Bain to get Kevin Durant and pairing him with John Morant. Now I want the Grizzlies to have to watch. The Nets and the Warriors playing the NBA Finals. How about that? I want them to have to sit back and watch that and think, hey, that could be us. But no, we didn't give up Desmond Bain. Seriously, they're idiots. Sorry. I just felt like going off there, Shams. Shams, quickly, Knicks, Donovan Mitchell. Anything? Anything there?
They're in pursuit, in heavy pursuit. I mean, the Knicks have been trying to get Donovan Mitchell for the last month and a half. And so, listen, I think Utah does have other deals on the table, potentially, that could be just as intriguing as the Knicks. But I think when you look at the totality of what the Knicks have, they have young players like Quentin Grimes, Obi Toppin, Emmanuel Quickley. They have a bevy of draft picks, 4 unprotected picks of their own. They have 4 other picks from other teams, so 8 total picks to use in a trade. From what I'm told, they've already made 5 of their first-round picks available, 2 unprotected, along with Obi Toppin and additional salary. So how much more do they need to add to that to make a deal done? I think they need to put more in. That's what I'm told. Utah is asking for more. So time will tell. There's a month before training camp. But I do think that those conversations, especially once Patrick Beverly got traded, I think those conversations will continue to escalate.
How did we arrive at a place where Beverly goes to the Lakers? How did that kind of come about there? Is that a guy LeBron wanted, coveted?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers targeted Pat Beverly, especially once the Kyrie Irving situation unfolded the way it did and he's staying a Net. You know, you have to move on to other options. I think Rob Pelinka, the Lakers, wanted to improve this team. And I think you go get a culture setter like Patrick Beverly, He had a big, voice and a big responsibility in Minnesota last year. You bring a guy like that over. And I think Taylor Horton Tucker needs an opportunity like Utah, a guy that needs more of an opportunity to have the ball in his hands. I think Utah will be able to give him that. I think we're all seeing Utah moving more toward a full rebuild, right? And so two teams going in different directions, and I think this deal does accomplish a goal for both sides.
Check him out, senior lead NBA writer, insider for The Athletic and Stadium. Shams is with us here. The team that improved the most in the offseason, what do you think?
Oh, man, you put me on the spot there. That's a great question.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're a basketball fan. I know you're a machine, you're a robot. You're not supposed to have opinions, but it's okay once in a while.
The team that improved the most.
It would have been the Grizzlies if they traded Bane for Durant. I
mean. I'm gonna go with a few. I'll go with a few. Okay. I'll say I think Boston improved getting Malcolm Brogdon and Danilo Gallinari. Yeah. I think those are big pickups. I think Philadelphia improved. You get PJ Tucker, Daniel House. Like, they were able to improve their team without doing anything. They didn't make a trade. They just were able to use the money that James Harden gave back and give it to other players. So, you know, kudos to James Harden. Did what's best for the team to win a championship. I think he's putting his money where his mouth is. I think Atlanta improved getting DeJounte Murray. I think the Clippers improved and Denver improved just based off getting guys healthy. I think both of those teams to me are going to be two of the top teams in the league. Denver getting back Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., Clippers getting back Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's going to be big time. So those are probably my picks right now for the teams to me that mostly improved this summer.
I have a quick question for you. I'm not certain because I am convinced that if you wanted to transition to the NFL, I'm just going to ask you, okay? If you wanted to do what you do for the NBA, because you're the best in the business, okay? If you wanted to become Adam Schefter, let's say. Appreciate you, by the way. Got it, man. But if you wanted to become Schefter, could you, and how long would it take you to arrive at Adam Schefter in the NFL?
Man, I think what they do, like, Ken Rosenthal in baseball, what Adam Schefter does in football, like, I don't think I can do everything. I don't think I can do NBA and then still do NFL at the same time. So for me, I've picked my path. I love the NBA. I love basketball.
You chose wisely. Yeah. In this ridiculous scenario, though, I have you bailing on the NBA, going to the NFL, and trying to become Schefter. Could you? I think you'd be bigger.
I have a better game, Stu Gotts. Okay.
Let's hear it, Billy. Okay. Let's hear it.
You switch places with Ken Rosenthal. Who's better, Ken Rosenthal basketball beat or you baseball?
Listen, man, I love Ken Rosenthal. Shout out to The Athletic. Shout out to Ken Rosenthal. Listen, for me, I always try to have tunnel vision. I only focus on myself. I only try to be the best I can be. So, I mean, listen.
It's you.
It is.
Listen.
We'll say it.
Whether it's NFL, MLB. I love what I do with the NBA, though, so I'm going to stick with the NBA, you know, politics, you know. I think, listen, I'm always going to try to be the best I can be at anything I do, so.
Right. That's, but Rosenthal, he's not breaking down any NBA walls. I mean, he's just not. He's Rosenthal.
Listen, I'm a big Ken Rosenthal guy, though.
So am I.
Me too, yeah.
He's an OG in the game.
Billy love Rosenthal.
What he's done on the MLB side has been big time. But listen, what's crazy, I actually grew up loving the MLB, like playing fantasy baseball. Like, in high school, I was like religious about fantasy baseball. Like, literally every day, like, I used to love managing my team. Like, it was like a religion for me. Like, I was so obsessed with fantasy baseball. That's something I've never said on any show, Stu Gotts, by the way. But like, literally, I probably had no life in high school because of my obsession with basketball and the NBA and fantasy baseball. So that's a first.
Let me ask you something. So Stu Gotts has hired someone to run his fantasy baseball team for him.
Yes.
Smart man. I mean, he's a smart man.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. If he wins championships, that doesn't count.
Wait, well, hold on. No, Shams is saying I'm smart because he's a hired gun. He's my general manager. Yeah. Baseball is too time consuming, man.
That's what I'm trying to say. So listen, on one hand, I agree with you, Billy. I think that's a cheap way to win a championship. On the other hand, Stu Gotts, listen, he loves fantasy baseball. I love fantasy baseball myself. But me, I don't know if I could take that route. I have all the respect for Stu Gotts for taking that route. But me personally, like, I love, like, living and breathing it, like setting my lineups, like trying to win a championship, making trades, like being a GM, like that was fun for me. So I don't know if I could hire my own GM, but for me, like once I started to do the NBA stuff more and like go to games and reporting when I was a junior going to my senior year of high school, I just couldn't, like I've always been very one track minded. Like, so I couldn't go like 50-50. I had to go all in. Unfortunately, I had to give up my fancy baseball dreams after that.
Right. Too time consuming. I look at you, Bill.
Time consuming.
It's worked out for you, though.
Listen, this guy Inferno has won 5 of the 7 years he's been in our league. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know who Josh Rojas is. What do you want from me, Billy?
My team had Evan Longoria every year as my third baseman. Yeah. Roy Halladay. Yeah, I used to love him. I used to draft him every year, trade for him every year. Loved him. Right. I think those are really my two like mainstays. Like every year I play fantasy baseball, but what's it? Freshman year of high school through senior year of high school.
You had like decent friends, because if I would have picked up on the fact that every year you get Evan Longoria or Roy Halladay, I obviously would reach and take them like a round early, just knowing I could get
See, that part is true, but you got to say I was the one who was doing the reaching though.
Yeah.
Like, I was the one who was drafting them like way earlier, like going out of my way to trade for them. I was like obsessed with like Evan Longoria at third base, like always, hit a bunch of home runs, great on base percentage. I did everything for you, stole like 20 bases too. Roy Halladay was just a machine, reliable, always playing. So like Stugatz, like those are like the only two baseball players I can probably break down like back of my head. Like Roy Halladay never missed a game. Like you could always depend on him. Shout out.
They were staples on your fantasy team.
Staples on my fantasy team.
I love how much you dork out to baseball, dude. It's great.
Also, rest in peace, Roy Halladay.
By the way. Rest in peace.
Yes.
Fantasy baseball is really the hardest of the fantasy, because like fantasy football, it's just luck. Because
once a week, you just wake up on the Sunday and set your lineup.
Set it and forget it.
I have no hired gun for that. I hired Inferno because I don't know the minor leagues. I don't know who's coming up, who's getting dropped. Baseball's changed a lot, man.
Did you have that person on your league?
Rosenthal, by the way. What was that?
Did you have that person in your league that you always got? My dad always did John Lackey for some reason, which didn't work most of the time. Like, because he did it late in Lackey's
His
career.
ERA was high for me, man. He was reliable, but his ERA was a little too high for me.
So the guy I always had, Billy, this is why I had to hire Inferno. So I did it for like 16 years. I won one time. I got lucky once, okay? But the guy I always reached for, because it was going to be the year he stole 100 bags, was Tony Womack. I mean, that was the guy I always went
You're
for.
Old.
You're an ass.
See, I'm nodding, but I don't know. I don't know if I ever had him on my team.
Sean doesn't even know who Tony Womack is. Look him up, youngster. Okay.
Shout out fantasy baseball.
Oh God, I want to have you on again just to talk baseball if we can do that. Okay.
Listen, I just what I need to do is I need to go back and find my roster, and then like all the players that I had, it will jive my memory back, and then because one year I did win the championship in fantasy baseball. It'll jog my memory back, and we'll just have a full Zoom just on my roster. We'll just I'll like break down all the players to the like it's like machine, like NBA. I know all my guys.
We can't get there soon enough. Please let us know when you find the roster. Okay, I want to do this tomorrow. All right,
I'll hold you to it.
All right. Anything you want to promote on the way out here? Again, senior lead NBA insider, writer for The Athletic and Stadium. Shams with us here. Anything to promote on the way out, my friend?
Nothing crazy. Shout out to The Athletic. Shout out to Stadium. Got the Telly Awards in the back. I did an AT&T commercial with Stadium that Stadium produced. It got those Telly Awards. Shout out to Telly Awards.
All right, man. Hey, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys having me. Thanks.
I told you via text, and I'll tell you again, man. It's been a pleasure to sit back all summer and watch you work and do it better than anyone in the business, man. We appreciate it, and keep the information coming, my friend.
Appreciate you, Stugatz. Thank you, guys.
Who knew Stugatz? Shams, big fantasy baseball guy.
Sorry, you asked me to do an outro, and I was just sitting here looking at wires.
You're still trying to figure out the wire situation?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. Who knew? Right, that was very exciting. I can't wait to break out my, 1999 fantasy baseball roster. You guys will know no one on my team. Tony Womack is the guy I forgot.
I was looking it up, and I saw he retired, I think, in 2006, and I was like, man, how old was Shams in 2006?
How old was he?
I don't know. I'm looking this up right now, actually.
How old is Shams? I mean, That is one good-looking young man, huh? I mean, yeah. I don't know why I said that.
He was born in 1994. So in 2006, he was 12.
Right. Well, I mean, Tony Womack. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
He retired in 06. I said 60 bags. Did Womack ever steal 60 bags?
You said 100 bags is what you thought that he was going to steal. Yeah, let's see what Womack's career high was.
I'm looking it up too. I can't get there soon enough. Tony Womack stats. I haven't looked them up in forever. Oh, what an exciting day.
You know who else, Stugatz, always somehow ended up on my team was Mark Burley, because he was always going to pitch 400 innings a year.
Yeah, yes, but innings wasn't a category, so who cares?
Wow, Womack stole 72 bases in 1999. Boom. Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. 72, a 58 the year before, and 60 the year before that. Wow.
When did you say Shams was born?
94.
So when he was 5, he stole 72 bases.
When he was 3, he stole 60 bases. When he was 4, he stole 58. When he was 5, he stole 72.
Stupidity.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.